It's time for Rescuers, the show about people who change and save lives. Now, here's your host, Art Brooks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Rescuers Radio Show. Heard every Thursday at 5:30 p.m. on Faith Talk 1360 and faithtalk1360.com. And if you're interested in hearing all of the shows, we're over 200 now. You go to our website, rescuersradioshow.org, and you can chase back as far as you want to go. And this is a leadership or a listeners-supported program, so if you're interested in that, you can find your way through the website as well. So I have a special guest today, Alan Sequela. And welcome, Alan.
Art, thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, and I'm gonna, before we get into what your point of life is, I'd like to hear something for our audience to get to know you. So a little bit of background for you.
Oh, great, Art. Let me start with saying I'm not from Arizona like so many of us here, right? Started in the East Coast, Rochester, New York, moved out here, and I attended NAU, so I'm a lumberjack. Yeah, I'm not a Sun Devil or a Wildcat, although I have a lot of respect for both of those schools.
And you're teaching in Prescott.
Yes, I'm a professor at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in the College of Business Security and Intelligence.
Well, we're going to talk a lot about that. So I don't know how you got into the security and intelligence business. We're going to check that out. And how long have you been in Arizona?
Well, jobs have taken me around the country. This is the third time I've lived in Arizona. I've been back since 2005.
Yeah. So you do speaking and things around the country and maybe even outside the country once in a while. But we're going to talk about that. So your main business is security and intelligence. And how did you get into this discipline and how are they used most commonly?
Sure. I'll have to take you way back.
Yeah, that's okay.
So obviously when I went to school, I was thinking about a major. I started off in accounting and I thought, wow, do I want to sit behind the desk and work numbers all the time? That bored me. Within one semester, I decided that's the wrong place for me, in the wrong direction. So I worked into a new program called law enforcement up at NAU. They called it police science. And that's really where it started. And interestingly enough, up at NAU, they had the crime lab right next to where all the classes were. So I got to meet the polygraph examiner and some of these other folks that worked on the forensics. So I got interested in that field merely by being associated and sitting next to those folks. And, of course, finished my degrees, undergraduate and a graduate degree, went into law enforcement, became a polygraph examiner, which is, of course, lie detectors.
Did you do that for a police department? Or
I did that for a lot of people.
Okay.
So I did it for intelligence agencies, police departments, attorneys, and ultimately I migrated away from that to the corporate or private sector as it was more lucrative.
So talk to us a little bit about the kinds of organizations or associations that you've been working with.
So in the career sense, I've been involved with organizations specific to the field, such as the American Polygraph Association, the American Society for Industrial Security, InfraGuard. Those organizations are there for professionals in the field to help develop and mentor students and young people to get them interested in the career path.
Yeah.
I'm also a board member of an identity theft advisory board, which is a volunteer board, and that helps to prevent victimization, you know, with children on the internet as well as child safety.
Wow, that's huge right now, especially with all the debates going on with, you know, kids too much, too little on the web, and other countries are involved, but all of that. But so how those are different disciplines, right? That you have intelligence, security, and the you were just talking about the lying detector, you know. And there's a lot of industries that use that your skills for that.
Well, not so much in the private sector. Most of the lie detection and polygraphs used in law enforcement and the intelligence community.
Okay.
So 1989, there was a Polygraph Protection Act, which severely restricted the use in the private sector. Mm. And so you see it mostly in law enforcement intelligence is where it's used today.
And how did you get to be a professor in aeronautics at Embry-Riddle? I mean, that's a well-known university, but how did you land there?
Well, when you think about Embry-Riddle, that's the first thing you think about, you know, aeronautics, right? Oh, you're going there to be a pilot. No, I don't know how to fly. I'm afraid to fly. So we have four colleges up there, one of them being aeronautics. But I teach in the College of Business, Security, and Intelligence. And to answer your question, I knew the chair of the Global Security and Intelligence Committee. I met him when I was presenting at a conference on white-collar crime. He talked to me and built a relationship. And
is this at a national level?
Yeah, it was a national conference, the American Society for Industrial Security, where professionals come to hear speakers. In any event, I met him and stayed in contact. When I retired as a director of security at Cox Communications, I called him and said, hey, I'm looking for some consulting work. Do you know anybody that might need my skills? He called me two weeks later and said, no, I don't know anyone, but I do have an opportunity for you to teach with your background, because we obviously have a program and degree path in global security and intelligence. With your background in polygraph and interviewing, don't even like to use the word interrogation, but the CIA ruined that for us after September 11th, but we call it enhanced interviewing or security interviewing.
Nice.
But, we don't waterboard. Okay. But in any event, he had me come up and teach a class midway through the semester. He said, Sequela, we like what you're doing. How would you like to come full time? And now I teach four classes up there.
Wow. And you weren't in the commercial world, you were with Cox for just a short time? Or?
Well, 16 years.
Oh, okay. All right.
Good long time.
And they needed security of what they do, right?
Oh, if you think about it, what most people are not aware of is that in the corporate environment, there's more incidents of criminal activity than you'll ever know because it's not reported. Companies do not want that information getting out. It could impact everything from their stock price to their brands.
Sure, yeah.
So a lot of that stuff's handled quietly and dealt with. And so then when we talk about careers also, there's actually a ratio of 8 to 1 for every investigative role, intelligence role in a private public sector. There's 8 as many in the corporate sector. A lot of work out there.
Wow. So and that's really great information. Do you do keynote speaking around the country or something on these schedules, opportunities?
Anytime I have an opportunity, I actually do more training than keynote. I'm going to be doing a two-day conference at the Northwest Polygraph Association this summer, where I'll actually teach the polygraph examiners or different methods for interview and interrogation. And I do present at different associations as well.
Well, you know, you're noted as a specialist in security and investigations, and you've talked a little bit about that. What types of public and professional sectors, we're covering it now, but what haven't we uncovered that for you? What other types of situations have you taught in or worked in?
Well, okay. Well, along my path and my career while I was doing polygraph and investigative work, I was able to move around the country with different assignments. And I would teach adjunct at different universities and colleges. And it was more so to identify top talent. And I was always looking to recruit. I've always been into mentoring the young professionals and tried to get them interested in this career because it's so important, whether it's the public sector or the private sector. So I've used that and, of course, continued now doing it full time at Embry-Riddle, where I'm teaching, mentoring, and actually bringing students in aware to this particular career path because so few were aware of it. Other than what they see on TV and Hollywood, what they portray, and they're not aware of what goes on in the corporate or private.
That's not correct.
No. And I actually laugh when I watch a polygraph being connected to an individual. They never have it right, and so I have to turn it off.
That's pretty funny. But you're trained to know the truth and how these things are really handled, right?
Yeah, and you got to remember Hollywood's entertainment, and it's not there's not a lot of reality there. Even when you look at how they interrogate suspects in any of those detective or shows, we don't put a light over their head anymore. It's nothing like what you see in Hollywood.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. So you have a book. Is it coming out or already out? You've co-authored a book on the subject.
Yeah, I co-authored a book. It's called Security Investigations, and really it was interesting how I started with that. It's actually used for professionals or those who want to get into the field, but I'm also using it in one of my classes. My students last year were asking me questions about the original textbook I was using, which was published in 1999. They said, hey, Professor Sequela, what is a 35-millimeter film camera?
There we go.
Yeah, I took a breath. I laughed a little bit, and I said, wait a second. You don't know what film is? And they just looked at me, and they said, Sequela, this book was written before we were born. Could you, like, get a hold of the author and rewrite this thing? And that's how it started. I actually reached out, and he said he wasn't interested. So he said, how about if you do it? And so I rewrote it and then became the co-author.
Yeah, it's called Security Investigations, A Professional Guide, and it was released last year.
Yeah, it was actually released in August. We finished it up, and I'm using it now in my class. And, of course, it's also available to professionals in the field who have an interest in this world.
Yeah. So give us some samples of when you're working with law enforcement. What kind of work are they giving you and asking you to do, or industrial use? Give us some samples of that.
Yeah, let me take you back to most recently. So in the corporate sector, there are all kinds of things that go on, and again, most people aren't aware of. You might have sabotage, espionage, embezzlement. Those are typical investigations that the corporation would investigate internally. So if you have a corporate security team that conducts an investigation, and it's like, let's say it's an insider, because the vast majority of the big problems are insiders. When you have that case and it's developed, the corporation has a team that would look at it and say, okay, what are we going to do with it? Are we going to prosecute? Are we going to go after them civilly and just try to collect on the losses? Or are we just going to release them? Now, that decision's not easy.
These are major corporations you're talking about.
Absolutely. So. We're talking major corporations. Yeah. And you think about what we're going to do if you have a multi-million-dollar investigation. And so in many cases, when they're that significant, the legal department, compliance, my team would come together and make a decision, yeah, we're going to file on it. So the case is built internally by our investigative team, and then it's handed off to the proper jurisdiction for prosecution. So when I work with law enforcement, every jurisdiction is different across the country.
Yeah.
Including the federal system. So,
They're small, medium, large,
yeah,
and ultra.
And they have different processes. So let's say, for example, in Alabama, I've done cases in the South where you would actually have to go in front of a judge, present your case, and then he would issue a warrant. Whereas in Arizona, in Maricopa County, you have to make a police report, then fill out, let's say, an embezzlement packet or a fraud packet, turn it into the prosecutor, and, of course, then they work together. But all the work is done internally, and most people understand that law enforcement doesn't have the specialty to be able to investigate these types of crimes that occur in corporations. They rely on
personnel-wise, right?
Yeah. And they don't have skill sets because they're not used to dealing with these sophisticated embezzlement cases or fraud or what have you. So employers, such as where I came from prior to teaching, has certified fraud examiners, trained investigators that look for this stuff. They build the case. Then, of course, if they decide to prosecute, they follow the process in that jurisdiction to file on it.
Mm. And do you get called around the country? Is it mostly in the U.S., I'm assuming? Do you ever have some offshore stuff?
I was when I was in the corporate world, I had cases in Canada, Mexico, Puerto Rico, and the United States. So, of course, every country has their own rules on how things can be conducted. And so, yeah, certainly I had to work with those authorities and figure out what the process was if the corporation was going to pursue some sort of criminal action.
Wow. So I'm going to take a moment with a message for our audience. If you came into this episode of the Rescuers Radio Show late, my guest is Alan Squala, an authority on security and intelligence. And so what those are wide open subjects, right? I mean, who knows what we all know what security means, or what we all have a definition of that. But when you start talking about investigations and intelligence work, that's off the charts for most of us, right? So how do you bring that forth to be understood and carried out some of the things you've done?
Well, it is pretty broad. So you have to look at everything from national security. So we'll start big and go small.
Yeah.
So think about the intelligence community's wired.
And take your time. We still have some time on
awesome.
The clock.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the national security realm, obviously we have our greatest responsibilities to protect American citizens and, of course, also other democracies around the world. So the intelligence communities are always looking for anything that could impact that. Everything from having undercovers out there, working human intelligence, to also cyber, other different types of way of collection, let's say, of intelligence, looking for those risks or threats to the United States.
I may be wrong about this, but it seems to me on the broad scope of this subject, cyber is high level. And most, I don't want to say popular, but that's a big digging point, right?
No, absolutely.
Today's where we are today, technically.
Yeah, think about TikTok right now, for example.
Yeah.
So
Congress right now is trying to close the door.
Close the door on it.
Yeah.
So you have the House that's already agreed that they want that stopped because they believe China is, of course, associated with that, and we know that Chinese. Is an enemy of the state. So we certainly have to be careful about that. Yes, cyber is huge, and you think about all the breaches that occur on corporations, the government. Just this past week I received two letters from two different entities because my personal information was stolen.
Oh.
So it's going to happen to everybody. Identity theft is huge, and so every person will be victimized at least one time in their inner life.
Yeah.
For me, it's probably been about 10 times, even somebody who lives and breathes this stuff. So we're all targets. So, yeah, information and cyber is huge, and, of course, that's how most of this stuff is done today.
Yeah.
So, everything from a street criminal to anyone that's a terrorist is going to be using the cyber approach to cause their havoc.
Yeah. So you have mentioned that you have a big interest or an interest in shaping the next generation of security, intelligence, and fraud examiners. Explain that to us.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And the big picture here is we have a duty to protect our society and our nation. But what we forget, and I think that even is never covered, is protecting the corporations that pay the taxes that fund the government. Remember, our Constitution was written to protect citizens against government overreach.
Yes.
And, of course, as citizens and businesses, we have to continue to operate, have the ability to operate without too much restriction so that we can continue to employ, pay our taxes, so government can operate.
Mm-hmm.
The Association of Certified Fraud Examiners, which is another association I'm connected with, puts out a report to the nation every year. And the amount of fraud and embezzlement and sabotage and espionage that goes on in corporations around the world is staggering.
Yeah.
The FBI says there's about $300 billion lost to American corporations. Mm-hmm. That's based on what's reported.
Wow.
But what I can tell you is corporations are only reporting a small percentage of what actually goes on.
Wow.
So from my estimation, based on my, I would say it's going to have to be at least 10 times that amount.
How many are, how many people have your skills around the country? You talk about teams and obviously in different cases you have a team you can call in to help, to work with you. Tell us about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Art. So think about, certainly I don't know it all, but what I do know is I have certain resources I can pull upon. So if you're in a corporation, you have certified fraud examiners. They're the financial accountants that can go find the money. You're going to be working with cyber experts that can do the forensics on what happened, whether it be done internally or externally. They're going to be partnered with you. You have the compliance team, which is usually part of legal, because they want to make sure you're doing it right. Mm-hmm. Then you have the human resources team. You do have an investigative team of SMEs, subject matter experts, that can help you as you're building your case. You want to do it legally and ethically. You want to do the right thing. But by using these SMEs, we can get our handle on that situation, hopefully as quickly as possible, so we can limit the amount of loss or exposure that the corporation is going to have to deal with.
Yeah. So, gosh, you know, you hear in the news almost daily of an elderly person being spammed. You know, somebody called them or convinced them that they needed to pay some money or whatever that is, and they would say whoever they're, you know, backing, and some of these people are left penniless. They've took all their money out of the bank or wherever that was, and that there's nothing you can do about it.
Oh, it's big. And if you think about what's going on, so it started off with the emergency where somebody would call and basically say, I'm your grandchild, I'm in jail. That was a popular one a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And please
give me some money.
Give me some money. Get me out. And that was one of the scams. You're seeing the romance scams now, which are pretty big. You're starting to see the Social Security scams.
What's the romance one?
The romance scam is somebody that friends you on a social media site, and they basically continue the communication until you fall in love with them.
Okay.
There's actually a Netflix series out there on one. It's called The Tinder Swindler or something like that. But in any event, that particular woman was scammed out of $140,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Romance with someone she never met.
So some of this is common sense, you would think. But these guys are so skilled what they're doing, right?
They're amazingly skilled. Yeah. But, you know, caveat emptor, which is buyer beware.
Yeah.
You have to be aware that that's what these people do for a living. If you don't meet them. Think about our generation. We had to meet somebody in person. And so
if the call coming into your cell phone says, could be spam, pay attention.
Well,
don't move forward, right?
Well, absolutely. And you think about the elderly, because they're the ones that tend to get scammed the
unfortunately.
Most. Well, they're trained to answer the phone. They think it's respectful. No, don't answer it. I tell my mother, do not answer the phone. Let it go into voicemail. Law enforcement's not going to call you. The IRS is not going to call you. They're going to send you a subpoena, summons, or you're going to get a certified letter. Do not answer the call.
So if you don't know for who that number, delete it away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't answer.
Send it to the trash.
Interestingly enough, they don't leave voice messages.
Wow, that would be you're right about that. So, my gosh. Is there anything we haven't touched about what kind of message would you like to leave our audience with today?
Well, I think the message I want to leave them with is know that there's a lot of scams, a lot of issues out there, and there's a lot of issues that we want to protect our businesses and citizens from. And if you have any interest or you know any young people are interested in this field, I think they need to kind of look at it because there's plenty of opportunities. You know, I heard a stat last week. There are over 500,000 jobs open in the cyber realm that are unfilled because of the problems that we have. And, of course, even at our university at Embry-Riddle, we have 100% placement with backup offers to our students because they're in such high demand. So I would just say for the young people, look at this as a potential career path if you have any interest in helping the government as well as the private sector.
And the types of disciplines are you know, just as we've been talking about, security investigations of all kinds. But Alan, you are the resource for this. How could somebody contact you if they're interested?
They can get me on LinkedIn. It's so Alan Sequela on LinkedIn. Or they can also email me at my last name at erau.edu at the university.
Okay. Well, Alan Sequela, you are a rescuer, and thank you for being on the show today.
Art, thank you so much.
God bless.
Rescuers, Thursdays at 5:30 Arizona time on Faith Talk 1360 KPXQ AM.